Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. With the introduction of bills in both the Florida House and Senate to ban fracking and fracking-like activities within the state of Florida, the Conservancy of Southwest Florida is hosting a question and answer session for media later this week with a leading researcher on unconventional oil and gas extraction. For the rest of the hour, we're going to get a bit of a preview. I'm joined now by Dr. Anthony Ingraffia. He is the Dwight C. Baum Professor of Engineering Emeritus and a Weiss Presidential Teaching Fellow at Cornell University, where he has been since 1977. His research concentrates on computer simulation and physical testing of complex fracturing processes in metals, ceramics, and geomaterials. So, Dr. Ingraffia, welcome to Gulf Coast Live. Thanks for your time today.
Good to be with you, Julie. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
We're also joined in studio by Amber Crooks. She's the Senior Environmental Policy Specialist at the Conservancy. Amber, welcome back to the show.
Thanks a lot.
And as always, we'd like to hear from you. What are your thoughts on banning fracking in Florida? Join our conversation by giving us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So, Amber, let me start with the basics of the proposed legislation. It's House Bill 273 and Senate Bill 462.
That's right.
Proposed by Senator Dana Young from Tampa and Representative Kathleen Peters from Treasure Island. Bipartisan support there. So what exactly are they proposing?
Yes, we're very excited to see that the identical bills that garnered so much support and momentum last legislative session have been reintroduced. So these bills. We're hopeful that this year we'll make even more progress and ban fracking in the 2018 legislative session.
So do these bills differ at all from the ones that were proposed during the last legislative session?
Nope. They're practically identical. They have all of the things that we will look for in a strong bill, and that they ban fracking outright. They include things like matrix acidizing, which is another form of well stimulation treatment that weren't addressed by prior regulatory bills. So it meets all the marks that we're looking for, and it's garnered great support amongst environmental groups, businesses, communities, and also last session we had, like you say, bipartisan support. We had about half of the Senate signed on as co-sponsors and a very substantial amount in the House as well.
Okay, but then last year's bill was rejected by House Republican Leader Ray Rodriguez, in part because he said it would come into conflict with what's called the Burt-Harris Act that says government can't take property rights without compensating property owners. Does this year's bill do anything to address that concern? And also, what are your thoughts on that line of reasoning?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, there's no reason for Florida to not take action on banning fracking last session or this session on that rationale, because mineral rights owners can continue to access their rights through conventional drilling. So what these bills would do would just address well stimulation treatments, which have proven risky in other places. And I think Dr. Ingraffia can speak to the science that we now have to show just how risky these practices are. But it would continue to allow conventional drilling that's been taking place in Florida for decades. So the legal takings argument really isn't a valid one.
Okay. So it just limits what the person can do. It doesn't say they can't.
That's right.
Okay. Or the processes by which they do the drilling.
Correct. They can still do mineral extraction through conventional oil drilling techniques. But mm-hmm. this would ban what the science shows are really risky treatments, the hydraulic fracturing, acid fracturing, and matrix acidizing.
All right. Well, let's get into that science. We're talking about proposed legislation to ban fracking and fracking-like activities in the state of Florida. And now we're going to turn to Dr. Anthony Ingraffia from Cornell University. He's going to be updating local media later this week with a stop in Southwest Florida. And you can become part of this conversation by giving us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. So, Dr. Ingraffia, tell me about the scope of your research into hydraulic fracturing.
Sure. I began doing research in the general topic of fracturing of rock in the late 1970s as part of my PhD work. And from about 1980 to about 2004, I did advanced research and development for the oil and gas industry as a researcher at Cornell. My graduate students worked with scientists and engineers in the oil and gas industry. I worked with them as a consultant and an outsourced researcher, looking at the advanced techniques for stimulating an oil or gas well to enhance production.
So do you normally participate in events like the media Q&A at the Conservancy this Thursday?
Yes, this would be one of over 200 such events. I've, I participated in over the last roughly 8 or 9 years.
Well, so I guess then it'll be not too difficult for me to ask you to give us a CliffsNote version of the difference between hydraulic fracturing versus acid fracturing versus matrix acidizing.
I am going to do my very best.
I'm pretty sure you can talk about it in much greater detail than I will ever understand.
I will do my best. So let's start off using definitions that the industry uses, and as we go along, I'll explain them so that we non-industry people can understand them better. And I'll use an analogy where appropriate. So first of all, the bills that we're talking about, HB 237 and SB 462, strictly speaking, prohibit not fracking. They're much more general than that. They prohibit advanced well stimulation treatment. Now, those are fancy industry terms because the bill is supposed to address the industry. So well stimulation treatments, there are many that have been evolved over the last 100 years of oil and gas development. One of them is called hydraulic fracturing. So now I'm going to use the analogy. Your listeners can imagine they're holding a sponge in their hand. An ordinary kitchen sponge, and they're looking at it, and they see it's got lots of holes in it. And that sponge represents the carbonate rock that's sitting below South Florida. Think of it as limestone. Fancy word, carbonate, just means limestone. And that limestone, anybody who lives in South Florida knows that it's full of holes, and it's full of a lot of water, mostly fresh water. And over the eons, hundreds of millions of years, oil and gas have seeped into that sponge from below it, from thousands of feet below it. And some of the holes in that sponge now contain oil and gas. You with me so far?
I'm following.
All right, so hydraulic fracturing. What is hydraulic fracturing? Imagine you drill a hole, a well, into that sponge, and you put fluid, hydraulic fracturing fluid, a liquid, down that hole under such pressure that you crack the sponge and you create joints between those holes. The holes get connected because you created cracks between them. So you can imagine some of those holes have oil and gas, and if you now interconnect them by fracturing the rock between them, the oil and gas in many holes can flow back to the well. So you stimulated that carbonate rock to give up more oil or gas than you would have gotten had you just drilled a well into just one of those holes.
Does that actually yield a whole lot?
Say again?
Does that yield a lot? I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but
no,
I'm thinking about these little holes, and it doesn't sound like it's going to bring us a whole lot more.
Well, they're not little holes.
In
the sponge, they are little, but down below, they could be thousands of cubic feet. They could be the size of rooms, and they could be filled with oil. But if you just drill a well straight into one of them, if you're lucky, then you get all the oil or gas that's in that one hole. But if that one hole isn't connected to any of the others, then you're not going to get as much as you would if you stimulated the well by using what's called hydraulic fracturing, which by definition means you're using a fluid, hydraulic, to fracture the limestone between many holes. So you're enhancing the production of the well. You're stimulating it. That's what stimulate means. So that's what hydraulic fracturing is. Now, there's something also called acid fracturing, which is also prohibited by these bills because it is an advanced well stimulation treatment. So now, in addition to pumping a fluid down into your sponge, the limestone, to fracture it, you want those fractures to stay open, and you want them to be very wide so they become pathways, very wide pathways. Think of them as superhighways between all those holes containing all that oil or gas. Well, the way you can do that is by using an acid to etch away the limestone, literally eat it away, so that the cracks that you've created by hydraulic fracturing are wider, and it's easier for the oil and gas to flow back to the well. That's called acid fracturing, and that's by definition in these bills included in the advanced well stimulation treatment. Now, there's a third thing that's also prohibited. It's called matrix acidation. Acidization. The matrix in this case is the rock. Think of it as the sponge you're holding in your hand. That's the matrix, fancy word. When you inject acid without fracturing, you're not trying to fracture the well. You're literally trying to eat away all the rock between all those holes containing oil and gas. So now you've created a larger hole You've made one hole much larger because you dissolved all the rock between a bunch of smaller holes. Those are the three main techniques that have been proposed, and in some cases are being used in places like Florida and other places. But they're advanced techniques. They're unconventional techniques, and that's what these bills now prohibit.
Now, I'm
reasonably clear? Is that
yeah,
okay?
That was great.
But I'm no geologist here, but when I'm hearing about this matrix acidizing, that kind of makes me scared of sinkholes.
Well, yeah, you're creating underground, hopefully sufficiently far underground, you're creating a big hole. And if somehow that hole can weaken the rock and the soil above it all the way to the surface, you are, in effect, increasing the probability of a sinkhole. There are a lot of variables, including how deep you went and how big a hole you created by this acidization process. But it's certainly a risk that you're creating by this process. And that's one of the reasons the bill prohibits it.
Mm-hmm. Now, have they studied exactly what the downside is of doing this in Florida as opposed to other places?
Yes, there are some studies. And predominantly, what differentiates Florida is that, as I said before, most of the people who live in Southwest Florida are aware that they're sitting on top of a holy limestone. I don't mean holy in the religious sense. I mean a limestone full of holes. Those holes contain water, and it's possible that during these processes, you're not only creating pathways between holes containing oil or gas, but you're creating pathways between holes that contain water that weren't connected to oil or gas, which means you're now contaminating the water. And if that water was being accessed by a water well, your water well now becomes a water plus gas plus oil well. And so the problem in southern Florida is that since you can't see underground, you can only do very unsophisticated tests to try to figure out exactly where all the holes are and how they're interconnected naturally, and you can't possibly predict. It's impossible to predict if you acid treat in either way that I mentioned or hydraulically fracture. You can't predict where all that damage to your sponge, your limestone, is going to stop. In other words, you could be creating many more pathways than you really wanted, including pathways to fresh water that's being accessed by drinking water wells. So those are the major risks. Southern Florida is densely populated in many places, not in the Everglades, but East Coast, West Coast.
Well, and it's all connected, too.
Millions of people live there, and they rely on an increasingly spare quantity of drinking water.
Yeah, that's something I was going to add too, Julie, is that we've been able to draw upon, like say for California, for example, about matrix acidizing. There's been some studies by UCL that came out to show some of the toxic chemicals that they use, not only in the hydraulic fracturing that we see from in other states, but out in California using matrix acidizing. And also the experience that we've had just here in Collier County at the Collier Hogan well, which has been an adventure from day one and not in a good way. We continue to have to track water quality monitoring reports from that's where the first instance of fracking was documented in Florida. Now going on 4 years later.
Yeah. Tell me a little about that Collier Hogan well for people that aren't familiar with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So back in 2013, 2014, they utilized hydraulic fracturing for the first time documented in Florida. And they also had used matrix acidizing on the well as well.
Oh, they went all the way.
They used both techniques, and we were only able to get some of the information through it becoming a very controversial issue. And so we have a glimpse into the type of chemicals that they utilized there, the quantities of water that they were permitted to use, which is about 280 million gallons per year. So it gives us a snapshot of, in one well, what if fracking were to take place at a greater rate here in Florida, what we could expect in terms of risks and also water consumption.
Is it possible to say that would be kind of what a typical well would be?
I would suppose so. A lot of that's proprietary information. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to say comparatively, but it does give us, I think, a good snapshot into the type of toxic chemicals that they used here in Florida, and it compares to what they have utilized in other states.
It's comparable to what's been found to be true in other states. And the question that I would have then is, did you find toxic stuff, chemicals, acid, and all that in freshwater as a result of that?
It's still ongoing. In fact, there's been a couple of spikes that we're investigating with the Florida Department of Environmental Protection. Seems like for right now, there's nothing to put our hands around as far as a conclusive result, but they continue to do water quality testing. We'll continue to do that for at least 5 more years, not only from the unauthorized fracturing that took place, but also from illegal disposal of about 83 barrels of oil/oily waste just last year. So, like I say, continues to unfold all of the problems with just that one well.
And that's only one. But then, I mean, according to what I'm hearing from Dr. Ingrafia, I mean, and Dr. Ingrafia, you can chime in on this at any point. But when you're talking about one well, that's definitely not going to be a representative of what's going to happen in any other well, because a sponge has pretty random holes in it.
Exactly. So no one is going to make a profit by going into Collier County, going into the Everglades and drilling one well.
Yeah.
There are going to be many wells. There are already hundreds of wells that have been drilled in Collier County over the last 50 or 60 years. Right now, I'm looking at a map right now, there's 6 active wells in Collier County, including 3 at one of my favorite places. It's called Shark Valley. You've heard of that? So roughly 15 miles from Shark Valley in the Everglades, there are 3 wells that are under development right now using the techniques that we're talking about. And as Amber pointed out, the big risk is that you're not talking about 5 or 10 gallons of acid or other chemicals. We're talking tens of thousands of gallons that are necessary for each well. And you're potentially talking about hundreds of wells if the operators and the entities that are leasing their properties to the operators try to exploit all of the possible oil or gas that's there. We're not talking about a well. We're talking about hundreds.
Yeah, and we know that there is some interest in increased oil drilling where the well stimulation treatments might be used, because we're currently tracking some seismic survey projects. You may have heard about the Big Cypress that took place last spring that we tracked in the field and that we continue to weigh in on, as well as that's over 200,000 acres total project area. And then there's about 100,000 acres of seismic survey area just north of there. So we're talking about a large area here in Southwest Florida that's being explored or will be for oil and gas resources.
It seems like they're kind of moving forward on the assumption that they're going to be able to drill and frack and try to extract whatever. But I guess another question, I want to circle back to Dr. Ingrafia on the scale, the volume of scale and the number of wells that are going to be required to make this type of practice even worth it. And you said that you've worked so for this time in how trying to get the most out of any given well. Does this really, I mean, is there any way that it's been quantified how much more adding fracking or matrix acidizing or acid fracturing, is there any way that that's been quantified as to how much more that will bring in out from a well?
Yes and no. As a general rule of thumb, if you do one of these well stimulation techniques, fracking, acid fracking, matrix acidization, you're more likely than not going to get more oil or gas out of the well, but at a higher cost. So the economic equation comes into play. Right now, the value of oil and gas is very low compared to 5 years ago, 10 years ago. Remember when oil was $150 a barrel and gas was being sold for $14 per 1,000 cubic feet? Well, as of today, oil is selling at about $50 per barrel and gas at about $2 per 1,000 cubic feet. And so companies are cutting corners. Many companies have gone out of business. You shouldn't expect Exxon to move into South Florida. There's just not that much oil or gas in South Florida to attract a major developer.
Well, it seems like there's a lot of fighting for not a whole lot.
Well, that's one of the points I wanted to conclude with today, but we'll say it right now. it's kind of silly when you look at what's been happening around the world in terms of the so-called oil and gas revolution of the last 10 years. Florida is sort of like a me too. Don't forget me. I'm tail end Charlie. The United States Geological Survey publishes reports on estimated reserves of oil and gas in every state in the union. And when they did an evaluation of Florida a few years ago, I mean, I'll read you some numbers. Let's see. There's enough oil or gas. Let's do oil first. If the operators went into every place in South Florida where they think there's oil, there's a lot of ifs here, and if they can get every drop of it out, it would take hundreds of wells, and the total amount of oil produced would fuel the United States for 17 days. 17 days, not 17 years, not 170 years. And then it's all gone. It's not like it's going to come back again later. It's gone. There might be, if they got all the gas in southern Florida, and you can never get all of it. Typically, you only get 10-15% of the gas and maybe 5% of the oil. You might have 20 days of gas for the United States. So Florida can raise its hand and say, me too, we're going to help the United States energy dominance. But frankly, we don't have very much to give. So now the other equation comes into play. Who's going to benefit from that little bit of oil or gas? A few people. Who's going to suffer the consequences of the environmental harm, the human health risks, the exacerbation of climate change, because these are fossil fuels that are going to get burned? Who benefits from them and who gets hurt? Few people might benefit. Everybody else gets hurt. Is it worth it for that small amount that's down there?
It's been an interesting half hour. I've learned so much. I can't tell you how much I love this show for many reasons, one of which is I learned so much. And on a day like today, it's just been great. And with that, I want to go to Amber Crooks and ask you just real quick, how do you think this proposed ban is going to go in this next legislative session? Do you think that there will be roadblocks thrown up in front of it again?
Well, those are the kind of questions that leave me up at night a little bit. But I think Dr. Ngrafia said it very eloquently, more than I could ever probably do. But to explain that there are inherent risks with well stimulation treatments and fracking in Florida, and it's not worth the risk. And I think more communities, local governments, about over 90 now, have put in place resolutions or ordinances to support this ban on fracking. And the indication that we now have a bipartisan support, people are beginning to understand that this issue is a Florida statewide issue, that we've had the effects of the Collier Hogan well, for example, cross county boundaries, where we had thousands of barrels of toxic flowback being transported across the Everglades to Miami. To understand it, so it crosses geophysical boundaries, it crosses political boundaries, and that there's a groundswell of science, community support, citizen support, and that it's becoming a platform issue. I hope that we'll have, building on this momentum with Dr. Ngrafia's visit for our evening's presentation tomorrow and the media event on Thursday, to contribute to that momentum and hopefully see a ban of fracking in 2018.
All right. And people can find more information about this discussion on your website?
That's right. Check out conservancy.org/evenings.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have right now. I want to thank our guests. Dr. Anthony Ngrafia is the Dwight C. Baum Professor of Engineering Emeritus and a Weiss Professional Presidential Teaching Fellow at Cornell University. That's a mouthful, but I got to tell you, I've learned so much. Thank you so much, Dr. Ngrafia.
Thank you for the opportunity, Julie.
Also, I want to thank Amber Crooks, Senior Environmental Policy Specialist at the Conservancy. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Our show today was produced by Rachel Iacovone, and yours truly. Our director today is Mike Canary. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.